you're listening to Magnifico Radio. I'm your host, Kate Black. Each week, I sit down with leaders, makers, and designers at the forefront of sustainability to discuss their journeys and motivation. Whether it's ethical fashion, clean beauty, or sustainable products, they're all doing something Magnifico.
Today's show is brought to you by Queen of Raw. Wouldn't it be great if there were an online marketplace that offered innovative and sustainable fabrics at low minimums and affordable prices? Check out queenofraw.com. No one does it like the queen.
Today's guests are part of the team of River Blue, the movie, where the international river conservationist and creator of World Rivers Day, Mark Angelo, discovers that the harsh chemical manufacturing processes and the irresponsible disposal of toxic chemical waste from the fashion industry is having a destructive effect on some of the world's most iconic rivers.
We have a very small amount of water, and that's got to accommodate the needs that humans have for drinking water, and a lot of that water is not accessible.
We are committing hydrocide. We are deliberately murdering our rivers.
Our rivers across the world were being deeply impacted by the dumping of poisonous toxic material.
Every single piece of clothing that you buy comes with a cost.
The fabric dyes used contain hazardous materials, things like mercury, cadmium, and lead.
These kind of chemicals, they don't break down, and they travel around the world.
This water is so toxic, there is no aquatic life.
If you see how people are living there, they have lost their sensory adaptation. They can't smell anymore.
They do have problems with drinking water supply. There's a high incidence of liver cancers.
If we continue like this, it's done. It's done.
Maybe it's because the demand of the world has gone crazy.
The statistics are insane. Something like 80 billion garments of clothes are being delivered out of factories.
Those products are actually sold to the world's biggest brand names.
A lot of companies do things that are very, very hidden and very secret.
So the pipe is underground. You cannot really see this factory that is dumping this.
You don't learn the details because at the end of the day, it's not a selling point.
The consumer did not wake up one morning saying, I want to buy 5 pairs of jeans for a fraction of the price. We were literally introduced to this concept by the fashion industry.
Narrated by Jason Priestley, the documentary follows Mark on his journey of discovery. And I'm joined today by Mark Angelo and the film's director, Roger Williams. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
Hi. So I've not run into either of you at Fashion Week, and your backgrounds are decidedly not from fashion. How did you meet and connect for this project?
I met Mark actually through a different project that he was doing. And it was very much a water-related project, as he's a water conservationist. And so I helped produce another project with him. And then that really started me thinking about what I wanted to do, because I actually wanted to do an environmental film, and I wanted to do it on water. I just wasn't sure exactly, what area it would look. You know, I looked at research on dams or agriculture or overfishing, and when we came across this photo from outer space that actually had a kind of a blue-black stain coming out of the Pearl River in China, that led me to kind of go, what's that about? And then we found out it was the fashion industry and how destructive it is. And it was really had to do with blue jeans and blue jean factories in that particular area. So, you know, I talked to Mark and I said, Mark, I want to take you around the world and go and look at rivers. And he was kind of keen to do that.
And so, Mark, was this the first instant that you'd heard about fashion's impact?
So, Kate, when Roger brought the idea of River Blue forward and we discussed it, I became really excited because certainly it was an issue that I was aware of. Also, the idea of doing a film that would be a positive agent for change really appealed to both myself and Roger and others that were involved in the film. We also saw the potential of a film like this to reach a new and broader audience. So we set out on this around-the-world adventure by river. You know, part of our intent was to take a snapshot of the health of the world's great waterways. But along the way, we also saw this incredible opportunity to take the first in-depth look at the fashion industry. And that's from denim to leather to fast fashion. And that was really important to me as a paddler, because it always bothered me that the impacts of the fashion industry had flown under the radar up until that point. And yet those impacts were very, very extensive. And next to oil, polluting industry in the world. Also, I think it's important to note that everything's interconnected. I've always believed that as an academic. And when you start to see toxins from an Asian textile mill showing up in the tissue of the North American polar bear, you realize these are issues we should all care about, regardless of where we live. So I thought River Blue was a great opportunity to bring some of these issues to light and hopefully in the end to affect change.
I liked it, and I liked the aspect of you, Mark, particularly sitting in the boat and a lot of times. And really, because I think when we, because we've been looking at these issues in the fashion industry in kind of the ethical fashion circles, and we've been having a lot of conversations about workers and worker rights and kind of the impact of fast fashion on the worker. But we forget that the worker has family and that the family has community and that all of these people congregate near, you know, the factories and particularly near the waterway. So I found it particularly moving that some of the scenery and some of the footage took into consideration the kind of the people who live of the and off the water. And so was that your kind of unique perspective, or was that the plan all along?
Well, I think the film is somewhat unique in that regard, in that it does take for much of it a real on river look at things. And not only does the film take a really good look and in some ways very disturbing look at some of the environmental impacts, the very real impacts that are there, but also there are a lot of human stories in the film. You know, one that will always stay with me was our experience in China on the Pearl River in and around Xintang, the blue jean capital of the world. And Roger and I went out with the fishermen, and I had been in that city 20 years prior, and it was still possible for a fisherman to make a living. Yet on this trip, we went out with the fisherman, and he was very depressed about the fact that there are simply no more fish to catch because of the extent of the pollution there. The fish are gone, and he's had to resort to sifting worms out of the muck that he then takes ashore and sells to fish farms and pet shops. And he felt that he had simply lost his dignity. And we saw really sad stories like that time and time again.
And so the movie jumps from India to China and then over to Bangladesh. So how long did it take to shoot and where did you start? Can you kind of just give me a little bit more background?
Sure. Actually, the film took almost 3 years to produce, and it took that long because getting access into countries and then some of the factories, there was a lot of conversations, a lot of negotiation to get into these countries and into those factories that we're able to get into. So it took us a long time to actually put the film together. We ended up actually starting the film over in London. And from London, and then we went to Africa and then Australia. And then we started making our way around to India and China and Bangladesh and Indonesia. So it had quite a it was quite a journey, that's for sure. To be able to, we hit 11 different countries, and there was multiple locations inside those countries, and we had people working with us on the ground in each one of those countries as well, and so it took a lot of organization to get our team into these locations and go and produce the film.
And were you transparent about what the topic of the film was when you were getting visas and access to entry?
Absolutely. We went in with journalist visas. So, for instance, getting into India, I had a colleague helping us in Delhi, and we were, we're going in as journalists. I had to go to the Indian consulate in Vancouver 18 times. So that took a couple of months to organize, to get, you know, to go through, because they questioned us on everything that we were doing, and we were very transparent of what we were doing in their countries.
And so I think one of the other things too that really struck me is when Mark, when you were in Jakarta and you were talking about the Chittoram as a shameful example of mankind's inhumanity to the environment and a crime mostly unpunished by law. Have, in your experience with rivers and river advocacy, do you know any countries that are taking water pollution seriously?
Well, certainly there are some that have made making an effort. One thing we try and do in the film is to say that, You know, while we spent time on a lot of rivers that were severely polluted, we also tried to make the point that in spite of that, though, you cannot give up on rivers, because with the right policies, the right laws, it is possible to turn something around. And one example that we use in the film is on the Thames in London. When I first paddled the Thames 45 years ago, you know, it was pretty much a dead river because of the extent of the pollution that existed there, whereas now it's come back to an incredible extent. You know, and in the lower river now, there's 120 to 130 species of fish. Water quality has improved dramatically, and I think that goes to show that if you take the right steps, you can turn things around. That said, we spent time on some incredibly polluted rivers in the film, some of the most polluted rivers on the planet. You know, I think of the Buriganga in Bangladesh and the extent to which it's been impacted by the leather sector, and the huge amounts of chromium that flow directly into the river during the leather manufacturing process. I think of the Citarum in Indonesia, once again, a river that 20 years ago I spent time with fishermen who could make a living. Now those same fishermen, once again, are on a river that no longer supports any life, and they've had to change their focus, and now they spend time collecting recyclable plastics that they find floating on the river in an effort to make a dollar or two a day. And then I already mentioned some of the issues we saw in the Pearl River in China, that is so extensively polluted with mercury and cadmium and lead and copper and potassium permanganate as a result of the blue jean manufacturing industries there. So there are a lot of rivers that are incredible trouble. But that said, I do think it's possible to turn things around if, in fact, the industry changes and if, in fact, there's a real strong effort to do the right thing. And I'm hoping in time we'll see that unfold on more and more rivers. But that said, the river pollution, water pollution, certainly one of the biggest environmental challenges on Earth at this point.
Especially around Hazarabagh. Like, I think that the Bangladeshi leather industry is one that really needs both industry focus and as well as consumer attention. Because a lot of consumers, I think, don't realize that even if the leather is processed in Bangladesh, if it's manufactured into final product in Italy or Japan, which are like some of the largest importers from that region, that consumers think they're buying made in Italy, that it's also been tanned there, or made in Japan, that it's also been tanned there. And I don't think they realize the crisis that location is really causing to the community, the country. And have you heard any news? Because when I was writing my book, I did quite a bit of research around that as well. And they had mandated that the water effluent treatment plant be built starting in 2002. The government and the Supreme Court had demanded it. And here we are, 2017. Has there been any movement?
Very little, actually. We were, Saida Rizwan Hassan, in our film, she's the chief environmental lawyer for Bangladesh, and she was telling us recently that one of the problems that they have over there is that the government, the people that are the MLAs, 25% of those MLAs are also the factory owners. So there is no real will to follow the laws. And she said, we actually have very strong environmental laws, but just no will at all to follow them because the factory owners are also in government. So that's a real challenge as well. So, you know, that sort of thing will have to change.
The movie is, you know, obviously a very disheartening look at how we've let so much damage happen to the rivers. But I love the focus on denim because you spent quite a bit of time focusing on technologies and the ways that industry, the denim industry, has evolved to kind of fix its ills. And so that just leaves us with the remainder of the finishing and processing for the fashion industry, which is a lot of what's coming into the Pearl and the Yangtze River damage, and then that leather issue in Hazarabagh. And so I think when you look at the denim, industry and who you chose to highlight, you can kind of say to yourself, or at least I did, oh, this is possible. Change is possible. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. And, you know, when we really were doing our research and we found out that blue jeans played this terrible role in what's going on the waterways, we knew that we had a story there because blue jeans are one of those things that are pretty iconic and almost everybody has a pair of them. And so we knew that iconic item, you know, would travel well and that we could really base the film kind of around that. And really, one of the interesting things that happened when we were looking for solutions, again, this was just a couple of years ago that we were filming this, and I was having a real hard time finding decent solutions. And Luigi Caccia, who owns Atal Denim, he actually emailed me out of the blue, and he had heard about the film from somebody, and that we're producing this film, and he emailed me and asked if I wanted to know more about what he was doing, and that he's doing everything right, and he's taking chemicals out of the equation, and he's got his own water treatment plant, and he wanted us to come over and see his facility. And, 10 days later, we're in Milan, Italy, at his facility, and I was astounded by how great his facility is. And I said, how can you do this when you're living in Italy? You have very expensive wages, you have expensive taxes, you have very severe environmental concerns. I mean, you can't put a drop of water into a river in Italy or you'd be going to jail. So I said, how can you do this and make a living? And he says, well, I figured out, I just went through my whole aspect of my manufacturing, and I figured out I can do water treatment. Yes, it's very expensive to put that in. But then I also started recapturing steam and creating my own electricity. And he's just gone through every aspect of his manufacturing and tightened it up as best possible. And then again, using Kitazan as his fixing agent and getting rid of, I think it was 19 chemicals that he was able to get rid of. So he can do that. And he says, you know what, I just make a little less money than those people that are making the same product in China or Bangladesh or Indonesia. So he's proven it. It can be done. And again, if bigger manufacturers started demanding that from their subcontractors, that could change quickly. To me, he's a real leader in how to make fashion positive for the planet.
A shining light. I totally agree. Okay, we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Special thanks to our sponsor, Bank & Vogue. Bank & Vogue provides a full package of services tailored to the unique needs and wants of the apparel industry. Immersed in clothing collection and reselling for over 20 years, Bank & Vogue services, expertise, and new manufacturing facility can help streamline your brand's challenge with waste. Renowned for their innovative and relevant solutions to the crisis of stuff, visit bankvogue.com. You're listening to Magnifico Radio, and I'm your host, Kate Black. And today I'm with The River Blue, the movie, the spokesperson and the film's director, Roger Williams, and Mark Angelo. So, Mark, how long will it take, say, for example, people stopped putting effluent from Hazara Bagh, so the whole leather industry used the effluent treatment center that they should, how long would it take to make that river come back to life?
When a river's been abused to that extent, Kate, you can't turn it around overnight. It will take time, but it can happen. Some of the local river issues I've been involved here in Western Canada, as an example, this Little Creek, Still Creek, I've been involved with, and another one, Britannia Creek. There was a time a few decades ago where they were the most polluted rivers in our country, pretty much. Well, after doing the right thing, making some real changes, both of them have come back. It's taken decades, but both of them have come back. I'd like to think for some of the extensively polluted rivers we spent time on and profiled in this film that same kind of thing can happen. When we set out to make this movie, once again, the goal of River Blue was to try and change an industry, make it more sustainable and more ethical. We also wanted to promote solutions, as Roger mentioned, and there are solutions out there. There are manufacturing advances. There are eco certifications. All of that's encouraging, but they just have to be embraced to a greater degree. We also talk a lot about conscious consumerism because particularly in an industry like fashion, the consumer can make an incredible difference. Well, if all of those things unfold, you know, obviously that would be a major step in at least starting the process of turning things around for the better.
And so that, so your guess would be that with some work, but within the lifetime of the people who live along those rivers, they could actually see it come back to where it was in its kind of former glory.
Yes, I believe that.
Yeah, I believe that too.
If we have change now.
If we have change today, things will happen within a lifetime. And I actually think that change will happen, and I think it's going to happen quickly. We got to get to that tipping point where manufacturers just, you know, hopefully through conscious consumerism and consumers asking, you know, where are my clothes made, how are they made, and wanting things to change, I think they can and will change quickly. One of the things that we were doing a screening in Washington, D.C. at the D.C. Environmental Film Festival, and after the screening, I was talking to this woman at and she was asking me a bunch of questions about it, about the manufacturing and how it's done. And I said, I kind of questioned her a little bit. I'm like, where are you from? Because you seem to know a lot about finance and stuff like that. And she said, well, I'm from the World Bank. And I went, that's interesting. I said, you know, if the manufacturers could get access to, you know, low interest loans and if the brands would help, you know, drive this change, maybe you guys could help finance some of this stuff. And she said, yeah, there's actually programs in place. And I went, well, that's great. I just don't think anyone knows about it. And she said, yeah, you're right. You know, there's finance available. There's manufacturing techniques available. There's consumers who are starting to demand this. So, you know, we're kind of in a perfect storm that potentially this could start changing real quickly.
It's true. And I think that that's the plus and also the sad part of the film, because you realize that change is possible. Change could happen tomorrow. And then when you look at the condition in the state and the fact that nobody has woken up and decided today's the day to make the change, it gets a little heavy.
Yeah, it can be discouraging for sure. But, you know, we just have to keep pushing forward. We're certainly pushing forward with the movie. Mark's continuing, of course, with all his water conservation efforts. And, you know, I think, and then again, the consumer, once they start learning more and more about this, I think they'll get involved too and want to see change because, you know, we only have one world and one ocean. And if we kill the ocean, then we've killed ourselves.
It's true. And with great visionaries and great visionary brands and consumer shift and conscious consumerism, the change is right around the corner. I have a question for you both. If your life had a motto, what would it be?
That's a good one. I've always kind of believed that follow your passion, and my passion has been filmmaking, so that's what I've done my whole life. Still continue to do it, and glad to still be able to do it.
And Mark?
I certainly adhere to that thinking as well, but also if I were to throw another one at you, and this reflects my bias towards rivers and water, but it would be water is life. Certainly what Roger said, you know, I would adhere to. You know, I think Roger and I both follow things that we're passionate about. I would add still, you know, some other, you know, there are other wording too. You know, obviously I've got a passion for rivers and water. Certainly, the line "water is life" is something that I've always adhered to, always believed in, and certainly, it's messaging like that is a very important part of the film *River Blue*.
And so, I know that worldwide screenings are planned this week in cities like Amsterdam and Austin, LA, Toronto, New York. And so, anybody who's interested in learning about the movie and what they can do to make a change is going to have their opportunity this Sunday. But I want to know what's next on your bucket list. What are you working towards?
One of the things that we're looking at is the potential to do a sequel to this, A River Blue 2. We're doing some research right now, and and if we, I mean, we still have to release River Blue, you know, not only throughout the world in this theatrical environment, but also we have to get it online and get it out there in a much bigger and broader way. And then after that, I think we will be seriously looking at a River Blue 2 as a sequel and more on the updates of all the positive things that are happening in fashion, because there is a tremendous amount of, you know, new ideas, new manufacturing processes.
That's great. And are you working on that together?
I would think we would. I
don't see why not.
So more river traveling for you, Mark.
Could be, which is something I'm always excited to do. But and I know from my perspective, you know, Kate, I'm going to continue my involvement in initiatives like World Rivers Day. That's a big initiative that always takes place the last Sunday in September. We have 70 countries involved, literally millions of people participating. And, you know, certainly when I see what's unfolding with River Blue and the potential for change, the fact that change is starting to occur in the fashion industry, that's certainly an important message we want to get out, something we want to push as we move towards events like World Rivers Day.
And so how can people find out more, and how can they find out if there's a screening in their city?
They can go to riverbluethemovie.eco and look under the tab Find a Screening, and we're always updating that. And then again, they can contact us through the website as well, because if their city isn't there, maybe we can find a way for it to screen in that particular city as well.
Thank you so much, Mark Angelo. Thank you so much, Roger Williams. I appreciate this. And don't forget, everybody who's listening, this Sunday, November 19th, at a city near you, or visit riverbluethemovie.eco to find a screening. That's been another episode of Magnifico Radio. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to great podcasts. And if you like what you hear, give us a review or a rating. It'll help Magnifico Radio rank higher amongst conventional fashion and beauty podcasts. Have a question or want to be on the show, email me, radio@magnifico.com. Want to learn more about clean and ethical fashion? Sign up for our newsletter at magnifico.com. I'm Kate Black. Thanks for listening.